Welcome to Conversations with Alan Wolper, a half-hour autobiography featuring unique personalities whose lives and ideas are on the cutting edge. Alan Wolper is an award-winning journalist and a professor at Rutgers University, Newark. And now, here's Conversations with Alan Wolper.
Just got the call from Dr. Weiser's office telling me that it's the best possible news, that it was stage 2 cancer and not stage 3. And I I feel like I officially got my life back.
That was Roma Torre's reaction when she learned in October 2014 that her colon cancer surgery had been a success. Roma Torre is the Emmy Award-winning anchor of Time Warner Cable's New York One. She's using her celebrity to promote colonoscopies. Her birthright has long been news. She is a daughter of the late Marie Torre, who made journalism history in 1959 when she went to jail rather than disclose her source in a libel case that featured Judy Garland. Roma, welcome.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
You're a very familiar face to an entire generation of New Yorkers. So let's get started. How do you get started in television news?
My initial interest was the theater. I wanted to be an actress in the worst way. And I was acting in all through my early years. I was in a professional production in the fifth grade of The King and I. And I went through my college years wanting very much to pursue acting. And it got to the point, and I did some soap operas, and I did quite a bit of stage work. But there was one day I was asked to do a movie, and, you know, we're talking about what the late 70s, 80s. I was asked to do a movie and take my clothes off. And
All of them?
Yeah, right. Well, you remember, nude scenes were de rigueur back then. They still are, obviously, but that was, you know, the way many movies were directed. So anyway, I was asked to do a nude scene, and I felt very uncomfortable about it. And I said, no, I'll give up the role. I can't do it. And I'd mentioned it to my mother, and one day we had a heart-to-heart, and she said to me, you know, maybe you ought to reassess your career goals if you're not willing to go all the way. Not that she wanted me to take off my clothes, but my mom was a realist, and she realized the fact that, you know, if you can't play the game the way the way it functions in the world, then you might as well get out of it. So at that point, I realized maybe, you know, acting wasn't for me.
And how old were you then?
About 22. About 22.
So in the business.
I just graduated, you know, from college. I went to Tufts University, and, you know, I did a lot of plays there. But at that point, I realized I really did enjoy the idea of journalism only because it gave me a sense, well, you know, journalism is showbiz. You know, a lot of it is show business, more and more these days, unfortunately. But I knew I could get that, the satisfaction of, in a sense, performing as a journalist. But also, I wanted very much to inform people about things that I thought were worth their attention. And so getting into my mother's line of work was an opportunity for me to satisfy all of those interests in my life.
And she was working at the time for a newspaper?
No, at that time, I was 22, she actually had a radio show. She was doing radio.
The Marie Torre show.
Yeah, and she also had some TV she was doing a little TV at that point. But, you know, she had just left Pittsburgh, where she was sort of the queen of television. You know, we used to say the Barbara Walters of Pittsburgh as
an
anchor.
I noticed, I read somewhere that she was the Pittsburgher of the 20th century.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow. Well, she deserved that. But a lot of people said she was the Barbara Walters of Pittsburgh, and she was, you know, an anchor at KDKA for many, many years. But she wanted to go back to New York, and she returned. And
she was born in Brooklyn.
She was born and raised in Brooklyn, yeah, an Italian girl living in Brooklyn. And she bounced around Bensonhurst for a while, I think Avenue O or Avenue P, I forgot. But Anyway, yeah, no, we were in Pittsburgh all during my childhood years. I was born in New York City, but at the age of 5, we moved to Pittsburgh, and my mom really made a name for herself.
She certainly did, and we'll get to that, but I want to know more about you.
Yeah.
And then, so you go to New York, and I think there was CBS involved in that. You had a whole long list of credits.
Right. Well, at the point where I made the decision to get into my mom's line of work, essentially, I told her, I don't want your help. I got to do this by myself. And so I sent my resume around, and I spoke to the news director at Channel 2 at the time, the local WCBS TV, a wonderful man named Frank Gardner. And he said, you know, kid, and he was one of those, you know, pull himself up by the bootstraps kind of thing. And he said, you know, kid, I can't offer you the kind of job I know you'd like. He said, but I do need a secretary. And if you want to come in and be my secretary, you got a job.
Your mother might have killed you.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about feminism. There was a story about her yelling at some news guy because they had something called women's news and men's news. And she said, they're all news.
Yeah, right. Well, I actually
tell her about that.
I digress a little bit, and I'll get back to that story. But there's a wonderful episode in my mom's life when she was hired to be the first news woman to do news like a man, as she was billed, and you know she was thrilled with that. I'll get to that in a minute. You want to know about me? So I ended up going.
This is your life.
Yeah, right. It's me. Well, there's a lot of digression, and you know what? My mom and I, you know, we have sort of similar tales to tell. She lied her way into her first job, and I lied my way into getting my first on-camera job. So I'll tell you about that in a minute. But I went to CBS as a secretary, and the promise was as soon as there was an opportunity to move up, it would be granted. The unfortunate part is that the news director, who I just adored, was promoted up and out. And then his replacement simply needed a good secretary, and that's as far as it went, as far as he was concerned about my fate over there. So this is where the lying part came in. I realized, you know, I'd already been there 2.5 years, and I wanted so desperately to at least be a writer, if not be a reporter on air. And so I had I started out wanting to be a writer, and I knew I had to kind of work my way up. And at that time, the only way you could be a writer at CBS was to take a writing test. And one of my functions as a secretary was to administer the tests to the writing applicants. So on a weekend, I came in and I swore everyone to secrecy in the newsroom, and I said, I'm going to give myself the writing test. And basically the writing test is you're given a lot of wire copy, and you have to write, I think it was 10 or 12 stories within a period of time. And then you hand it in and grade it. So there's no cheating, you know, in effect. And I had told everybody, you know, make sure that I'm doing this, you know, correctly so that if I'm questioned, you can vouch for me. So I took the writing test under an assumed name, and I—
What did you call yourself?
Catherine. I use my middle name, Catherine Friedman, my maiden name there. And a lot of Friedmans in the world, so I knew I could get through with that. And lo and behold, I handed in that writing test, and the gentleman who was reviewing those tests called me on my at home, and I, you know, in anticipation of this, I changed my voice message, and I said, "Catherine's not home right now. I know my friends must have thought I was a nut, but he called like 3 days later, and he said, Catherine, we really like your writing. We'd love for you to come in and talk to us about freelancing as a writer at Channel 2. Anyway, that day, you know, we made an appointment, and I called him up, and I said, you know, this is Catherine. I changed my voice, and he said, well, come into the news director's office. We'd like to talk to you. And I went into the news director's office, and I said, I'm Catherine. And the news director and with the managing editor and the assistant news director were all in there, and they were not thrilled. They're very unhappy with that. But I had the recorded message on my phone at home where they actually did offer me a freelance job. So they said, well, we won't let you quit your job, but if you really do want to be a writer, you can come in on your off days. So I worked 7 days a week for about a year and a half. So I was writing on weekends and secretarying on weekdays.
That's some glass ceiling.
Yeah.
Okay, well, everybody should know that they're listening to Conversations with Alan Wolpern on WBGO FM 88.3 and WBGO.org. And our guest, as you've been hearing, is Roma Torre, an anchor and culture reporter for the New York One cable news channel, and also the daughter of Marie Torre, who became a journalism legend in 1959 when she went to jail rather than reveal her news source. Now let's get you over to Cablevision.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 1980, 1990, I guess it was, 87?
The end of 86, yeah. Cablevision, I'm kind of a cable news pioneer, I guess you could call me.
I think
me.
You are, yeah.
They were starting at Cablevision a 24-hour news program, news channel, and it was the first in the country. I mean, they predated CNN and all of those 24-hour news channels. They wanted a local channel based on Long Island, and they were hiring a staff of, you know, young kids. They'd have to pay us a lot of money, but, you know, eager beavers like myself. And I wanted up until that point, I'd made a tape of myself, you know, a reel of me doing on-camera stories. And none of it was official. It was all, you know, stuff that I faked, but put together as if I was actually the reporter. And I sent it around all over the country. I mean, yeah, I was willing to go to Nome, Alaska, and I was rejected everywhere I went. And one day, I don't know if you recall Jim Brady, who was
sure.
a writer, right? We became friends because he was doing interviews at Channel 2. And he said, I've got a new book out. Come to my book party. And my boyfriend at the time was a writer. And I thought, well, this would be good for him. So I brought him along. And while I was there, Jim grabbed me by the hand. And he said, I know you want to be on camera. And he said, there is an agent here. And you should talk to him and maybe about getting you a job. And so he kind of waded through the crowd with me, holding my hand and me in tow, and he introduced me to Al Primo. And he said, Al, this is Roma. Roma, this is Al. She wants a job on air, and I know you're working with News 12 Long Island. They're hiring young kids. What do you say? Now, a little bit of a background here. Al Primo happened to be my mother's first news director in Pittsburgh. So he knew me. He knew of me. But up until that point, he really wanted no part of me. So anyway, when he saw me, he said, Roma, you look so beautiful. I didn't recognize you. And I was like, oh, God. Anyway, he said, I think I have a job for you. And he arranged for me to go for an interview on Long Island. And the rest is history. They hired me on the spot.
And then came New York One. And I think that experience, all the stories that you covered, everything – probably prepared you for that terrible, terrible day when you learned that you had colon cancer.
Mm. Well, first of all, I waited too long to get a colonoscopy. They say when you're 50, and I passed that threshold in my life, not thinking. I mean, I was asymptomatic. There's no family history of colon cancer, and I'm a very healthy person. I work out. I eat well, and you know, I adhere to all of the recommendations. And a friend of mine at work, one day in June of 2014, said he was moping around, and I said, "What's wrong?" And he said, "Oh, I got to go for a colonoscopy, and I can't eat anything." You know.
Oh
and,
yeah.
And it made me realize I was way overdue. So I scheduled an appointment for a colonoscopy, and you know, I was in and out and didn't think anything of it. And that it was July 24th, 2014, and I came out of the, you know, anesthesia, and the doctor comes over with this, you know, very stern face, and you know how doctors are. I'm sure they're trained, you know, not to break the bad news to look too, you know, too dour. And he said, well, you know, we found something, and I think I'm going to do – he said, we're doing a biopsy. And I said, well, it's not malignant, right? It's benign. And he said, well – and at that moment, I knew. It was like, oh, my God, now what, you know? And it's like everything went black. And, you know, it's like I was in my ears. I was – like noises were in my ear. Like I could see his mouth moving, but I was thinking all of a sudden I was thinking I'm dead, you know. And then I was thinking my poor children and my husband and, you know, the dog. I mean, I was thinking of everybody who was going to miss me. It's terrible how you know, when they break the news to you. Anyway, it was malignant, obviously, and I we scheduled the surgery, and, you know, it was really very, very, very frightening. It was a giant polyp or giant tumor that they found.
And, 2 feet long, you said.
Well, they cut 2 feet, 2.5
I'm
feet.
I'm kidding. I'm just.
Well, they cut 2.5 feet of colon. You know, you can afford to lose that much, which was eye-opening to me. But, the tumor was like 3 centimeters, I think they said, which is pretty substantial if in the world of tumors. And I just have to say, you know, that first night I was so depressed when I went to bed after hearing all of this. And I just decided if this is what happened to me, and, you know, I did all this research. By the way, I advise your listeners, do not Google after you get devastating news like that, because everything that comes up is the worst possible scenario. You know, it had, you know, the life expectancy, how many years I had to live and all this. It was, I don't recommend it because I was reading all of the negative stuff. But I thought, all right, if I have to go, I'm gonna use my name as a platform to get other people to avoid the mistakes I made, which was go get your darn colonoscopy when you're supposed to.
But announcing that on the air for someone who's as private as you are, despite the fact that you have a very, very public persona, you talk to Ed Lopez, your husband, and let's see if I got this right, I'm pronouncing it right, Alejandro and Allegra.
Yeah, Allegra, yeah, my Allegra. Kids. That was really tough. And, you know, my son was, 20 at the time, and my daughter, 18, and what was so distressing. Well, first of all, I'm one of those people, I am very private. I don't like to go public. I mean, I didn't even tell the family about the bad news that day when I saw the doctor because I wanted to be definitive that the biopsy was, you know, positive for cancer. So I held it in all that time. And that was rough. That was very rough. But part of it was I didn't want them to worry about me. You know, I was like holding it in.
And what did they say? What did they say when you said you wanted to go public with it?
Well, my husband was like, "Are you sure you want to do this?" And he said, "You realize, you know, everybody's going to know your age," which I have to tell you, that was one of the hardest things of all because, you know, in my line of work, it's all about, you know, how you look.
We'll keep you secret.
And now, please do. Now everybody's going to Google that. Well, what the heck? It's been out. But things like that, you know, and just the invasion of your privacy is really rough. And on top of it, colon cancer is, you know, there are more glamorous cancers to have, and that's if you could call them glamorous. But that was one where, you know, it has a kind of a negative vibe to it. It's, you know, there's a stigma.
How about your kids?
My children were wonderful, I have to say. So that day I found out the really bad news, and I sat everybody down and I told them. And my son, God bless him, you know, typical 21-year-old, he's into his own world, but or 20-year-old, he came over and he sat right next to me on the couch and he put his arm around me and he said, "Mom, we'll be there for you through the bitter end." And he said, "No matter what comes, we're there for you." And he was just phenomenal in the hospital. You know, he was the – because my husband was really very upset. That day of the surgery, he went to the hospital and he was doing all of the tweeting and the – you know, the texting, and he was the go-to guy with all the friends and family who wanted to hear the results. He was.
And then
really
you
special.
Went on the air, and the reaction.
Well, that day
still going.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard people still come up to me and say, "Do you realize you saved my life?" Because when I heard about your story, it pushed me to go for that colonoscopy, and they did find something. So it was so heartening to hear all of these wonderful stories. But I have to add. What made it even more difficult and emotionally traumatic for me is that the surgery was scheduled for August 28th. I had already
2014.
Of last year, and I had already, you know, planned to take my daughter to college. It was her freshman year, starting college at Emerson in Boston, and so I drove her. We drove her up on that Monday. It was the 25th. And we had to say goodbye, and she had freshman orientation, and then my surgery, 3 days later on the 28th. So it was stressful as it is when you drop off, you know, your lovely young daughter, and my daughter and I are very close. But, you know, I'm sure going through her head was like, will I ever see my mom again, you know? And it was just very, very difficult. I'll never forget that day walking in the Boston Common. I was doing interviews with the New York Post and the Daily News at the same time over the phone, and my daughter is just crying, and, you know, the separation anxiety was bad enough under normal circumstances, but then to have to do it with this hanging over both of our heads was really almost too much to bear.
You're listening to Conversations with Alan Walper, and our guest is Roma Torre, anchor and culture reporter on New York One cable news channel. How about talking about your mom?
My mom is my hero. I am so blessed to have had this woman in my life. Sadly, she died 18 years ago of lung cancer. She was a smoker, I should point out, but she quit in 1969. She died in 97, so I don't know if there was a connection, but she was, in three words I can describe my mother, grace, integrity, and class. And I always wanted, I'll tell you, she set a standard that I don't think I could ever match. She really was the light of my life and my hero.
She refused to disclose the name of a source. And one of the great stories I read, I got a big kick out of when she said, I just couldn't tell anyone because my children, meaning you, would think she was a snitch.
Right.
Well, journalism integrity, and all she was worried about was how you how you'd react to her.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's
you and your brother.
That's a simplistic. Well, first of all, you know, I have to tell you, the story broke in 1957 before I was even born, or before my brother was even born, and so that's partially true that she didn't want us to think of her as a snitch. I mean, there was more to it than that. And
there always is.
It was a principled decision on her part. But basically, when you know she was ordered to reveal her source in this, and I'll give the background in a minute of the story, but when the judge ordered her to reveal her source in the courtroom, she said, Your Honor, I can't do that because if I reveal my source, no one will ever talk to me again. And that's the lifeblood of a reporter, sources. So I mean, that was, I think, the initial motivation for her, you know, not to reveal her source. It's a cardinal rule, as we all know, in journalism.
Have you ever thought about what you might do if it happened to you?
I would probably do the same thing, yeah.
You'd
I mean, certainly
have.
I've had, you know, it depends on the story. And let's just make this quite clear. The issue involved was rather innocuous, and it was a libel case. And basically all it was is, you know, my mom had a column, a daily column with the Herald Tribune, and she was approaching her deadline and really didn't have anything to lead with. And she called her sources, and there was one source at CBS who told her, we're having problems with Judy, who at the time was supposed to do a live concert on CBS, a live performance. And he said, she's just being very, very difficult. And my mother asked this source, well, what's the problem? And he said, well, I think it's that she's become terribly fat. And so my mother quoted that in the article. But before she finished the article, she called Judy Garland's husband, Sid Luft, who was her manager at the time. And she said, this is what I'm going to write. This is what I was, you know, told by the CBS producer. What's your response to that? And he said, we have no comment. And that's what she wrote in the article. And then right after that, she was hit with a libel suit. And then my mother said to Sid Luft, we'll present your side of the story and give you a whole column. And that wasn't enough for them, and they pursued this lawsuit. And basically, the only way they could win the lawsuit was to find out who at CBS had given her this quote. And my mom said, nope, I refuse to do that.
There's a friend of mine named Abe Bunks who did some research on your mother. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, this goes way back to Peter Zenger when they were offering an award to try to find out who had leaked the story to him.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Well, you know, I will tell you that at the time, everybody wanted to know the name of the source. And my mom did tell my brother and me, but we were so young at the time, we didn't realize that it was a big deal, and we quickly forgot it. So she did take the name to her grave. Not that it really matters.
And you don't know? You don't remember?
No, we don't know. But
old were you when this
happened? She told us in elementary school, you know. Because she wrote a book. And when the book came out, we read the book as best as we could in elementary school. And we wanted to know because it was, you know, in the book, everybody, it was a big mystery. And so she said, well, I'll tell you, but you can't tell anybody else. And then we quickly forgot. But at the time, you know, there was so much pressure. And it really was a front page news story because here is this woman who just had two babies at home. And she was being ordered to reveal a source. And she was holding out, citing the First Amendment. And I don't know if you recall, Joseph N. Welch was a good friend of hers. He was the attorney for the Army during the Army-McCarthy hearings. And she went to him for advice from time to time. And so she said, well, what do you think I should do, Joe? And he said, oh, for God's sake, Marie, you're acting like an agitated housewife. Just give up the guy's name. And my mother said, are you crazy? I can't do that. And that's, you know, at that point, she said, my children will think of me as a snitch. So, no, she rejected that advice.
I haven't told anyone that she spent 10 days in the Hudson County Jail in New Jersey. But, you know, it's bizarre. I wonder how many people would be as courageous as she was back then. Mm. Journalism has changed so much.
That is, well, you know, I'll tell you something else that's rather interesting. Since that day that she went to jail and it sort of put her on the map as a journalist to be reckoned with and as a legend in the journalism community.
Forever.
Yes. Thank you for that. She's had some second thoughts about the privilege. And part of the problem is that she was fighting for the rights of journalists to maintain freedom, to write whatever they like. But there was a jealousy factor there. A lot of her colleagues were jealous of the fact that this woman was getting all of these headlines for protecting a source of information. And they were writing terrible things about her, and they made up stories about her. They put stuff out there. They wrote columns that really denigrated my mother and made it look like she was a simple gossip columnist. And it really hurt her.
For the New York Herald Tribune.
Yeah, at the New York Herald Tribune, a front page columnist.
One of the best papers in the country of all time.
And won so many awards, I can't tell you. I mean, highly, highly respected as a journalist. But sexism reigned back then, and she had a very difficult time. A lot of people did not wish her well.
Roma Torre, anchor for the New York One cable news channel, thanks for sharing your professional and personal life with us. And we wish you luck as you campaign to make your viewers aware of the need to test for colon cancer.
Please do. Amen. Thank you.
Joanna Welper is senior producer of our program, and Doug Doyle is our executive producer. Conrad Saguinetti is our engineer. You can listen to all of our audio biographies when you Google Conversations with Alan Welper. Until we talk again, I'm Alan Welper.
Special thanks to Phantom Audio, a full-service production studio in New York's Flatiron District. And support for Conversations with Alan Welper has been provided by the Blanche and Irving Laurie Foundation.